this is Pearl Lam Podcast. I'm now in Hong Kong, and I'm so happy that I have a very dear friend, William Louis, which is today coming here, sitting with me, and we are going to discuss and talk. William, can you give a brief about yourself too?
Okay. My family is the Kowloon-Mutabus family. My great-grandfather started the company in 1921. So we're 103 years old. And it's very rare to have a local company that lasts this long.
Absolutely. And, especially in Hong Kong.
And I'm the fourth generation. And I'm still active running the company.
First thing, which I thought was really interesting, is recently I met someone. Someone said to me, William, that he went to Oxford and you are the person who provided the scholarship. How come no one knew about all these things that you have been doing? So I really need you to tell. I mean,
all right.
Why
all right.
Why being so low profile? It's ridiculous. Tell us about what is this?
I think it's vulgar to talk about, you know, when you give. I think it's, you know, when you want to, when you give, when you do, you know, like charity work, I was inspired by my grandmother because I only found out, you know, I knew only 10% of what she did when she was alive. I found out in her funeral, everybody came up to thank me. What my grandmother did, she built this old people's home, she built this school for the disabled children and all that. I only found out in her funeral.
Oh my God, this is so
chic. In 1994, right?
So chic.
So I thought, oh wow, you know, the way to do philanthropy is to not tell people. And that is the highest level. Because you're not looking for recognition, you're not looking for social climbing, you know, people do it for different reasons, right? And I decided to follow her footsteps. And I started.
So tell me about this scholarship thing, which I just realized.
I mean,
what is the name of the scholarship?
Okay. I named it after my grandfather, William S. D. Louis.
Oh, it's also Louis, William.
Sorry, also William.
Yeah.
And I'm LK. He's SD. And because I love my grandfather, I have wonderful memories of him. I was only 3 years old when he died, but
for
some strange reason, I remember these scenes of him playing swings with me in the garden, and my grandmother was sitting opposite. No, not in this. I mean, it was in this garden actually, but now this house has been completely redeveloped.
I know. I remember when.
Yeah, it was one house. You celebrated your 30th birthday here. Remember? And anyway, so I thought it was a good thing not to tell people, you know, when you do something, you know, especially philanthropy. I always gave people the impression that I'm a playful guy. And I don't mind that.
I like to
give people that I don't do nothing. I'm playful. I just enjoy my life. And I don't want people to know that I do anything serious.
Tell us more about this.
Yeah.
This foundation or this scholarship that you have been going, when was it founded?
Okay.
And what was the mission? Tell us more.
Okay. So obviously it was, you know, my grandmother used to take me to all these old people's homes and, you know, disabled children's school and all that when I was little, as early as 7 years old, the year I met you. Okay. And I used to make sandwiches. I helped the servant in the kitchen to make hundreds of sandwiches. And she used to make me do that. So I went with her. And I think it started me off. I didn't know it was charity at the time. I thought I was just helping her, you know, to make sandwiches. Because I was only 7 years old, right? So, but I think she implanted this idea of giving to me. It's not just money. It's how you make the sandwiches. It's the time it takes. You know, you spend your time and your money, right? And then I decided to, instead of helping thousands, tens of thousands of old people or disabled children, I'm not saying that they're not important, but being
lazy,
you know me, I'm lazy, and I just want to help a handful of bright people.
Give
them a handful, you know, just a handful. It's easy for me to take care of. And hopefully they would change the world. And after the first year I had 6 scholars from China.
No, explain to me about the scholars, how it started, foundation?
Now, my grandmother gave me the inspiration, okay? And it started because one night I was listening to the radio, and the radio was on Marie. Marie was actually carrying Alistair at the time. And
Maria is William's wife.
Yeah, yeah. And she was carrying Alistair at the time. She was pregnant. And I said to Maria, I said, listen to this boy on the radio. He was the number one scholar in Hong Kong that was being interviewed. And it was re-aired at night. And I thought, wow, I'm so inspired by this young man, you know. I think let's look at people around us. Like all my friends, you know, we're all enjoying the crops from the previous generation. Nobody is driven. Nobody is, you know, has the network, you know, or create. I could envision that none of us will have this amazing network that our parents had, right? And so I said, let's create some network ourselves by finding some really bright people to help. And it was just an idea. And, you know, I could fail in this, like, you know, like I can send them away and then they would, you know, like not communicate with me afterwards, you know, these scholars. But they became like my family, right? I didn't think that far ahead.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So the idea was from that radio
show.
And then thinking of Alistair, you know, when he grows up, you know, my wife was pregnant. I said, when Alistair grows up, none of our friends can give Alistair the network, because we're all enjoying ourselves. You know, wake up at noon, we go to the yacht, you know, we drink a bottle of Chateau Lafite. You know, you know. So, I was thinking of Alistair's network, and it was a selfish reason. I admit it was a selfish reason to start a scholarship like that. But then after the first year.
No, first thing is,
yeah.
When you decided to start a scholarship, why did you focus in mainland China, a student from mainland China, other than other countries?
Good question. I belong to the YPO.
Yeah.
Young Presidents Organization.
Yeah, I know YPO.
And I joined the YPO in 1990. And I met the only Chinese YPO at the time, the only guy from China, Richard Yan. Richard is very interesting. The Yan family, Yim, you know, Yan Li, the series. The Yan family is related to the Song sisters.
Oh, wow.
Right? And that family is the founder of Nankai University.
Oh.
So overnight in Shanghai, his father was riding a horse. And he was arrested because he's from the wealthy.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
So the revolutionaries came and arrested him. And then the Red Guards, he was put in jail overnight. And Richard didn't start reading his first book until he was 14. He still ended up in Harvard.
Wow.
And then he's a fantastic, now he lives in Taiwan. And where he set up he actually found all the scholars for me. Because I told him about my idea, and he was the one who found, he's, you know, 2 weeks after he left Hong Kong, said, William, come to Beijing, I've found 200 scholars for you to interview.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because he has the network from his, you know, his family, they were the founder of Nankai University. So he has the network with all the top schools in Beijing. And it's easy to find scholars in Beijing because they have talent classes. So these children are normally 3 to 5 years ahead of normal children.
Wow.
Okay? So I decided to go and see for myself what these students are like. So obviously I would choose the one who can talk. Einstein would not be my scholar, right? Because I need people who can talk, who has interpersonal skills, who can do things other than studying. They can have you know, they can be good at sports, they can be adventurous.
You're very American.
I was brought up in a UK boarding school.
Yes, yeah, but not really.
But I don't want to have an Einstein in my scholarship because, you know, I want people who know how to do teamwork, right?
Okay.
Because I don't want just finding bright people. I want, you know, that's why I have to interview every single one of them. So one of my scholars arrived half an hour late. He was still accepted because he was so charming and he arrived half an hour. Can you imagine arrived half an hour late to an interview in Cambridge? So the professor said, well, you have to do this 4 questions out of 7 in 1 hour, but you only have half an hour because you arrived late. He did all 7 and got them all right. And it's actually because of this boy, Yan Qi, I can name him, that Prince Charles had this, at the time he was Prince Charles, he was the chairman of the Cambridge Overseas Trust. And because Yan Qi was so special in Cambridge, you know, he's not just good at studying, he actually never studied, but he came top in everything. And he was riding his... he was having his rollerblade going everywhere in Cambridge, right, instead of the bicycle. And he was very special child. And I received an invitation from Prince Charles. He wanted to meet me because of Yan Qi.
Ah.
Not only that he was a good student, but he was very likable. He was, you know, he charmed all his professors and he's now having a great life. So that's how it all started. It's from my grandmother. And then, you know, also there are many factors. Like, you know, my father died young.
Yes, I know.
So not many people can start a scholarship as early as me because I inherited when I was young.
Yeah.
I was 18 when he died. So a lot of my friends, including you, were surprised that I did not flaunt all the money and and turn into a scholarship instead.
Let me ask you first, why Oxford and why Cambridge? Why not different universities?
You and I were brought up in the UK. We went through the, you know, the public school system. You know, we were in boarding school.
But usually, you know, as a parent,
yeah.
I mean, especially today's parents, a lot of them would have chosen American university over
not British. In our circle of friends.
Last night, I just talked to...
I mean, there are two plans in Hong Kong,
yes, true.
Some go to America, some go to UK. I was in the UK branch.
So when you were in the UK, when you start to talk to them about scholarship, were the UK university very welcoming for your participation?
Not the first year, but soon after...
First year is which... How many students each year?
Well, let me tell you, I went through so many hurdles. Okay, even in China. After I chose my scholars in China, how would I know that they would give them a passport to leave China?
Oh, they still didn't
how would I know that the British embassy would give them a visa to come to the UK? Okay, so I have to go to Shanghai to convince the education department. The first sentence this guy said to me, he said, you're taking all my national treasures.
But they will come back.
But I said to him, they are no treasure until they see the world.
Yeah.
Okay? But whether they come back to China or not, it's not my responsibility. It's your responsibility to attract them back.
And so how did you persuade the university then for that scholarship?
No, don't have to persuade because they were accepted by all the universities because they all got 5 A's.
Yeah, but then you have to tell them that I'm providing the scholarship, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
How?
But the English university, they never offered scholarships. They pay full foreigners' fees, okay? And on top of that, they were doing Oxbridge levels, right?
Yeah.
In boarding school already because they were only like 14 or 15 years old. They all graduated from Oxford and Cambridge at 19 with a master.
Fantastic.
So when they were, I mean, they are amazing. I mean, they get great school reports and they are in doing scholarship level, S levels, and they are all predicted to get 5 A's.
So when you decided that you're going to do the scholarship, so you went to talk to Oxford and Cambridge and said that I'm going to send
No. I didn't talk to the universities at all. I actually became close to the universities because my students, my scholars did so well. And then they wanted me to send more scholars.
The other way around.
It's the other way around.
And how many of them returned back to China or returned to Hong Kong?
70% are back in China. Even the ones who are in the UK, in the US, or in Japan.
Oh, Japan as well.
Japan as well.
So how many scholars do you have today?
60.
60. Are you? And so every year you do your anniversary?
Every year, starting in June, I would fly to Beijing. I would interview 50 of them.
I'm talking about your old, your...
Oh, the previous scholars.
Yeah.
I'm very close to the first five batches.
Of course.
Very close to them. I went to their weddings. When they would introduce their boyfriends and girlfriends to me before their parents, it was that close to seek my approval and ask for my advice. Yeah. And when they have children in Hong Kong, I would visit them at the hospital.
So a lot of them actually returned back to work for...
70%.
It's great for China.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So I was, you know, I went to the scholar that you met. So I went to his anniversary, creative business. Very good business-minded people are all in his in that wedding.
In his orbit.
And in the wedding anniversary.
Okay, so let's talk about your real job now.
Mm.
Okay, I know that. I mean, I like the fact that because you're inspired by your grandmother, and you start to go out to help these students, and these scholars now is returning and is actually giving back to China. So then, you know, you running, being a director of the Kalamoto bus. I mean, William, I could not see you connected to a motor bus company. But I remember you were telling me you were going to England, helping them to buy motor bus. Explain to me.
My grandfather started buying double-decker buses from the UK in 1948, after the war. So he imported the first double-decker bus from British Leyland. Do you remember British Leyland?
Yes, of course.
And then Dennis, and then Alexander Dennis, and then now it's evolved to Wright bus, Thomas Heatherwick, right?
Yeah,
designed
Thomas
Wright bus.
And
I buy from these two big companies in the UK. And again, you know, my network is all in the UK. That's why my students went to the UK, right? So I used to go to the UK on business frequently, and I was educated there. So it's very easy for me to establish this UK network. And from buying the buses, that's not my job. It's the head of purchasing. But my job is in the company now, it's to create good morale among this 150,000 employees.
I know, because the bus driver loves you.
Yeah, I don't know why they love me, but basically I can make them laugh. And then I can, you know, I don't want to, you know, when I see them, I don't make them feel that I'm high, in a higher level.
You don't want to make them feel small.
I'm actually
treating them equal.
I rub shoulders with them. And this month, I'm so busy. I'm so glad that we found time on Sunday to talk to you. So we have 30 spring parties, lunch and dinner.
30?
To entertain 15,000 people, right? All frontline people. Actually, again, it was my grandmother who taught me always be nice to the frontline people because they're the first people my customer meet, right? That's why I want to help these scholars. I want to give a head start to people who need it, right? And then they're usually more hungry.
Of course, because they have to prove themselves.
Yeah.
So are you using the same attitude when you are dealing with your company drivers?
With my company drivers, I...
And the conductor and all that?
I run many clubs. The purpose is to have happy employees, right? So I have Dragon Boat, we're very famous, KMB Dragon Boats Club. We have a run marathon, we have chess, we have singing, we have badminton, you know, like many recreational clubs. and we have like 6,000 members, and through these clubs I go, you know, to do prize giving, and when they compete with HSBC, with Cathay Pacific, and when they come top in Hong Kong, they get a gold cup. I would go and present them with the cups, right? And by joining them at these clubs, I can listen to how happy they are, how not happy they are, and then I can
improve how frustrated they are, and how do you improve
and I can
the
improve
system.
The system. So that's how I. That's why I, you know, I enjoy doing what I do. Is, you know, really on a daily basis, I meet my frontline people.
But William, you are such a creative person. You know, you do. All my photographs is done by William, right? So you're such a creative person. You literally can paint, can do anything, but you chose this very corporate job.
No, this corporate job, you have to be very creative. You know, when you talk to them, how do you entertain them? That is also creativity. How do you gel these people? How do you make them, how do you give them feel proud of the company? You have to create things that you have to be creative. If you're boring, you know.
Let me ask, any of your scholars are creative?
They are not creative in the sense of drawing and painting and making sculptures.
But creative can be the mind.
Yes, exactly. While talking to you, I'm being creative. I'm trying to make your program interesting, right? This is being creative as well.
Are you making my program interesting? But so you bring in all your, because you have a personality which I think is very easily accessible by your staff.
Mm.
So do they listen to you?
Yeah. I noticed that, you know, we have 30, right? I've gone through 12 now. There's still half to go, okay?
12?
So 12 parties.
12 parties.
12 parties, okay? Last Friday. And my colleague told me, William, have you noticed when we speak, they are talking to themselves very loud. They don't listen. As soon as you go on stage, they keep quiet. That's how I know that I'm doing something right.
Wow. That is amazing. Huh? So when you, I mean, let's talk about your bus, okay? Your motor bus industry.
Mm.
I mean, are you thinking to have a driverless motor bus eventually?
Well,
and how are you going to deal with your driver?
This is the trend, right?
Yeah, how are you going to deal with your driver as well?
We'll definitely look into and start autonomous buses.
Yeah, of course.
But of course, we have to not lay off anybody because people...
Company, especially, it develop a very long-term employment.
Yeah, yeah.
And you look after your employees.
Every year, we have an annual dinner. Not these 30 parties that I'm talking about. We have a proper annual dinner. And that every year, we give long service awards. We have 50 years, 30 years, 25 years, 10 years. You know, like a few hundred people receive these awards. So they stay on, you know, and I think, you know, when you look at bus drivers, we don't call them bus drivers. We call them bus captains. They treat themselves like an aeroplane pilot. It's a very honorable job.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
That's why they stay, because they know that they are contributing to the Hong Kong society. And so I'm so proud.
Yeah,
I'm very proud.
Because you're looking after the people and giving the jobs and the contribution, to the society. Okay, talk to me about these driverless, autonomous.
Okay, so we're not going to 100% sure we're not going to lay off anyone for that. At the moment, that is still it's not very mature. You know,
it's very early.
We're definitely starting, you know, maybe in Kai Tak, you know, where the road is straight. And there are less, you know, like unexpected events that can, you know, some dogs or some people can run out of the street, you know, that kind of unexpected. But with 6G, with China shooting up more
satellites,
when 6G is mature, the buses will be very intelligent. And at that time, we will start thinking of having full autonomous.
But you are planning.
See, it's in our head. And the first planning is to have electric first. So we're 4,500 buses. And to turn them all into electric, we were actually announced to do it by 2040. But, you know, because of COVID and you know...
2040 is we were going to long time,
replace...
Right?
Yeah, all... No, because each 15 bus, years, each 15 bus years. Lasts for 18 years.
Okay.
Right? They have the 15 years depreciation. And then, you know, we have 3 more years that is literally no depreciation. So these buses are very well made. They're all made in the UK and you know, and every night they're maintained.
Yeah, of course.
So we don't want to scrap a new bus. You have to wait for 18 years for the new bus.
So gradually,
you will replace
one by one,
electric.
Yeah.
Okay? God knows. I mean, there might be something more advanced than electric.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So we're doing it slowly, and we're not going to lay off any bus captains because, first of all, autonomous is very immature at the moment. And also, you know, when they retire, then we can have an autonomous...
Yes, of course,
right?
Of course.
So when they retire, only when they retire, that we will replace them with autonomous, if autonomous is possible by then. At the moment, it's still very experimental.
No, you have autonomous bus in Samta.
Yeah, but you also have, like, they're talking about drones, right? So, the Hong Kong government is very pro-technology. But at the same time, we have to balance. We cannot get rid of real people for machines.
Of course,
because we have to take care of them.
Of course. So let's talk about your other side, your frivolous side.
Yeah.
Your frivolous side, love. I mean, sometimes I really don't understand is, you know, when people look at you, William, they only see your creativities, they see you, you know, you're always a positive energy coming to a party, but they never really touch what you are actually doing.
Because for some reason, I always like people to think that, I don't know why. You are the one who told me that because I have so much self-confidence that I don't really need people to think
that you're serious.
That I'm serious.
Yeah. But even when we talk about how creative you are, you are really serious in creativity.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you're doing your photograph, your video, your
interior design.
I mean, you've just done another house, right?
Yeah.
And all these things give you that, is it that enjoyment, that fulfillment?
Yeah.
Why do you do that?
I do that for myself. And I don't have to do it like as a profession because I have to run a big company. I really don't have time to be a full-time artist or, you know, even my son, right? I won't force him to go into KMB. He's in biotech. We don't need rocket scientists to run the company. And, you know, I have the duty to take care of the family business and to look after our family shareholdings. And the creative side, I can get fulfilled by talking to having friends like you. You know, I go to your galleries and I get to meet your artists. And I go to Kevin's ballet performances, yes. And I can talk to the dancers. I get my, you know, my fulfillment out of meeting, having good friends like you.
So do you want to develop your creativity into a business?
I never thought of that.
So anybody can come. William, this is a house. I want you to decorate my house.
Nobody, only you will ask me to do that because we're so crazy that we will design something that is totally. I always want something that nobody has. Same as you, right? But most people can't, and that's why I don't want to become an interior designer, because I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to listen to my client. I want to design something that
I
like for myself. I don't want to do something that people like. I want to do something that I like and I can control it, you know, by doing my own project.
there are people who doesn't know what they want.
Yeah.
So you're perfect for that. Right?
I know.
Many people who don't know what they want.
Well, first of all, I don't have the time.
Of course you don't have the time.
Yeah. And I'm perfectly happy. Like, you know, I perform with the, you know, to support my friend's charity, you know, by performing with the Hong Kong Philharmonic and Chinese Orchestra, you know. I even did a Chippendales, you know, for the Breast Cancer Foundation. Nobody knew I was going to strip that night, right? But I took the whole year working out, you know, so I make sure I look fantastic, right?
And and how much did you raise?
I raised 6 million.
Oh, wow.
In 15 minutes.
Oh, wow, not bad. 15 minutes, yeah, 6 minutes. Yeah. Chipping, okay.
Yeah, and you know, all the ladies you know, yeah, supportive.
Of course.
They give me checks, you know, and put it in my Dolce & Gabbana diamond studded G-string.
Last week you did a performance with the Philharmonic. I mean, tell us more about it.
I support like anything creative, like, you know, support the Philharmonic. So they invite people. You know, my daughter is a classically trained musician.
I know.
So I'm very lucky. I have two kids. One is a scientist. One is an artist. So it's very nice. Okay.
Very balanced.
And my daughter's after, you know, she took after my talent, and Alistair took after Marie's talent. Like, he's good at sport. He's good at studying. My daughter and I are good at being creative. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we got invited to perform with the Philharmonic, and as usual, I was wearing my latex tails, and nobody wears latex to perform with the Philharmonic.
It must be so hot.
No, I was wearing white, just the trousers.
Okay.
And it was kind of like, you know, when you don't have the technique, you're always trying to distract. Okay.
So you don't have the techniques and you try to distract, all right?
Okay. My daughter has the technique. I don't have the technique. I just, you know, I did practice 3 times with the Philharmonic. I wasn't that shameful, but I'm not a musician. I mean, I'm not a performer, but I'm just an entertainer. I just go on stage and I make people laugh and I sing reasonably well, you know. And then I also, you know, I think the costume is very important. You know, when you walk out on stage, and then I stand out.
As long as you're not Liberace.
I'm better than Liberace. I'm more exaggerated than Liberace.
And then?
And you raise funds, you know. I the last time.
Did you sing?
I sang, yeah. Yeah, I was telling you, I sang, I can sing, I can play piano, and, you know, my daughter is the pianist.
Yeah, actually, I know, accompanying serious.
And I also told you that, you know, the ping pong asked me to perform for 15 minutes. The only thing I can think of without practicing is stripping.
At this point, thank you, William. We have a great program today. Unfortunately, we couldn't see you stripping.